This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Welcome to your Sunday liturgy. This is the program that accompanies you as you prepare for the Sunday Eucharistic celebration. After the Sunday liturgy, you can listen to our bulletin of church news that will be followed by Panorama. Then, our feature, The World Around Us, with news about our environment. I'm Father Paul Samasumo. In the liturgy of this Sunday, Jesus proposes what is actually a difficult teaching. The new teaching or model of living invites us to love our enemies, be good to those who hate us, bless those who curse us. Jesus Christ is actually challenging us to go out of our way and do something extra in life.
Seventh Sunday in Ordinary Time.
A reading from the first book of Samuel. In those days, Saul went down to the desert of Ziph with 3,000 picked men of Israel to search for David in the desert of Ziph. So David and Abishai went among Saul's soldiers by night and found Saul lying asleep within the barricade with his spear thrust into the ground at his head and Abner and his men sleeping around him. Abishai whispered to David, "God has delivered your enemy into your grasp this day. Let me nail him to the ground with one thrust of the spear. I will not need a second thrust." But David said to Abishai, "Do not harm him, for who can lay hands on the Lord's anointed and remain unpunished?" So David took the spear and the water jug from their place at Saul's head, and they got away without anyone seeing or knowing or awakening. All remained asleep because the Lord had put them into a deep slumber. Going across to an opposite slope, David stood on a remote hilltop at a great distance from Abner, son of Ner, and the troops. He said, "Here is the king's spear. Let an attendant come over to get it. The Lord will reward each man for his justice and faithfulness. Today, though the Lord delivered you into my grasp, I would not harm the Lord's anointed." The word of the Lord.
The Lord is kind and merciful.
A reading from the first letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians. Brothers and sisters, it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last Adam, a life-giving spirit. But the spiritual was not first. Rather, the natural and then the spiritual. The first man was from the earth, earthly. The second man from heaven. As was the earthly one, so also are the earthly. And as is the heavenly one, so also are the heavenly. Just as we have borne the image of the earthly one, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly one. The Word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus said to his disciples, "To you who hear, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. To the person who strikes you on one cheek, offer the other one as well. And from the person who takes your cloak, do not withhold even your tunic. Give to everyone who asks of you, and from the one who takes what is yours, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. For if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do the same. If you lend money to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners and get back the same amount. But rather, love your enemies and do good to them, and lend expecting nothing back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, for He Himself is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Stop judging, and you will not be judged. Stop condemning, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and gifts will be given to you. A good measure, packed together, shaken down, and overflowing, will be poured into your lap. For the measure with which you measure will in return be measured out to you." The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with this week's Sunday Liturgy Reflection, here is Father Enobong.
This Sunday, we are presented with a difficult teaching that many of us are still struggling with as Christians. Christ's teaching on the love of our enemies, doing good to those who hate us, blessing those who curse us, and then praying for those who abuse us is a difficult nut to crack. In the first reading from the first book of Samuel, David refused to kill Saul in revenge for all the harm he did to him. He had an opportunity to kill Saul, but he did not. Vengeance is never the best way of to repay a wrong, but it duplicates the wrong and the chain continues. Therefore, let us avoid anger and hatred for those who have wronged us and instead strive to earn for ourselves the just reward of goodness as promised by God. May the message of Christ in all its richness continue to find a home in our hearts through the same Christ, our Lord. Amen. Peace be with you.
Father Hilary Munyaneza, Father Enobong Odaidion contributed to the program. I am Father Paul Samasumo. Do stay tuned in for our bulletin of church news and later the world around us, all about our environment.
Pope Francis remains hospitalized as he battles pneumonia and a complex of respiratory infection. The director of the Holy See Press Office and Vatican spokesperson Matteo Bruni on Saturday provided the shortest update so far. The Pope rested well, read the telegraphic message on Saturday morning. At a press conference at Rome's Gemelli Hospital late on Friday, Dr. Sergio Alfieri, the head of the team taking care of the Pope, and Dr. Luigi Carbone, the vice director of the Vatican's healthcare services, addressed journalists for over 40 minutes on Friday afternoon. The pair said that they believed the 88-year-old Pope would be hospitalized for at least the entirety of the next week, and that Pope Francis is not in danger of death, but is also not fully out of danger.
The question is the Pope out of danger? No, the Pope is not out of danger. And the door is open to both possibilities because of a significant infection with so many microbes, and then the appearance of bilateral pneumonia in a man we see who walks little, is in a wheelchair, and who is 88 years old.
Although the Pope's medical team noted at the press conference in Rome's Gemelli Hospital that he is joking as much as usual and has even begun working again, they underscored the fact that the main threat facing the Pope would be the onset of sepsis, a serious infection of the blood that can occur as a complication of pneumonia. Sepsis, with his respiratory problems and his age, would be really difficult to get out of, the doctor said. But as of Friday, there was no evidence of any sepsis, and the Pope was responding to the various drug regimes that he is taking. Pope Francis, who has a chronic lung disease, was admitted to Gemelli Hospital on February 14th after a week-long bout of bronchitis worsened. Doctors first diagnosed the complex viral, bacterial and fungal respiratory tract infection and then the onset of pneumonia in both lungs. They prescribed absolute rest and a combination of cortisone and antibiotics along with supplementary oxygen when he needs it. Dr. Carbone, who along with the personal nurse of Pope Francis Massimiliano Strappetti, organized the care for him at the Vatican and acknowledged he had insisted on staying at the Vatican in order to work even after he was sick because of institutional and private commitments. There at Santa Marta, he was cared for by a cardiologist and infectious specialist in addition to his personal medical team before his hospitalization. He knows he is in danger, Dr. Fieri concluded the press briefing at Gemelli Hospital, adding that the Holy Father had insisted to them, the medical team, to relay that information to the faithful and all the people of goodwill. Meantime, messages of support and prayers for the recovery of Pope Francis and for his health keep coming in from both religious leaders and groups and from the civil authorities around the world. The messages keep pouring in, even as the Pope continues being hospitalized at Rome's Gemelli Hospital. Lisa Zengarini tells us more.
Since Pope Francis' hospitalization on the 14th of February, messages have swarmed in from religious leaders and political figures around the world, and the children hospitalized in the same hospital. One of the messages that stands out most is addressed to his beloved brother by the ecumenical patriarch of Constantinople, Bartholomew. In the handwritten letter, the Orthodox patriarch wishes the Pope a swift and complete recovery and a speedy return with God's help to his sacred and important duties. Another letter came from the Patriarch of Jerusalem, Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, who has called on the faithful to come together as one family in faith, united in an urgent appeal for Pope Francis' health and well-being. The Symposium of the Bishops' Conferences of Africa and Madagascar has also assured solidarity and spiritual closeness of all the faithful in the continent. Meanwhile, in Pope Francis' homeland, Argentina, the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, Jorge Ignacio Garcia Cuerva, has issued a call for prayers. Messages and prayers have arrived from bishops and dioceses across the Americas. Earlier this week, the presidency of the Latin American and Caribbean Episcopal Council expressed affection and closeness to Pope Francis in a letter. We pray for you so that you may feel the strength and consolation of the Lord and that he may grant you much patience, read the letter. Similar sentiments are shared by the Catholic communities throughout Asia, including China, Also, world political leaders have joined the chorus of good wishes and support. On Friday, UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres expressed his best wishes for the Pope to Cardinal Secretary of State Pietro Parolin, remarking how important Pope Francis is not only for the Church but also for the whole world. I am Lisa Zingarini.
This week, Pope Francis was expected to have celebrated the Jubilee of Deacons, a ministry in the Catholic Church that precedes ordination to the priesthood. The Jubilee for Deacons was actually the fourth major event of the Jubilee of Hope, scheduled to take place from February 21st to 23rd. Already 4,000 deacons, together with another 6,000 pilgrims, are in Rome for this important feast. The deacons are participating in a series of meetings and will pass through the Holy Door as one of the main highlights of their Jubilee. The Jubilee for Deacons will conclude with Mass on Sunday, February 23rd, presided over by the Pro-Prefect of the Dicastery for Evangelization, Archbishop Rino Fisichella, in St. Peter's Basilica. On Saturday, Pope Francis accepted the resignation from the pastoral governance of the Diocese of Mardi in Niger, presented by Bishop Ambroise Ouedraoga. At the same time, the Holy Father has appointed Father Ignatius Anipu, a religious priest belonging to the Missionaries of Africa, to take over as the new bishop of the Diocese of Maradi. Until his nomination, Bishop-elect Anipu was the provincial delegate of the Missionaries of Africa for West Africa. He also served as the director of the Institute for Islam Christian Studies of Bamako. Bishop-elect Ignatius Anipu was born on 7th November 1959 in the Diocese of Navrongo-Bogatanga in Ghana. He was ordained to the priesthood on 20th July 1991. He holds a master's degree in Islamic studies, which he obtained from the Pontifical Institute for Arabic and Islamic Studies in Rome. He has since his ordination held a number of ecclesial responsibilities. In Senegal, meantime, Pope Francis accepted the resignation from the pastoral governance of the Metropolitan Archdiocese of Dakar, presented by Monsignor Benjamin Ndiaye. The Holy Father has since named Monsignor André Gueye to be the new chief shepherd of the Metropolitan Archdiocese of Dakar. Monsignor Ndiaye was, until his nomination, the ordinary of chairs and the apostolic administrator of the Senegalese Diocese of Saint-Louis. Monsignor André Gueye was born on 6th January 1967 at Palo Yunga. He was ordained a priest on 27th June 1992 in Chiers. He was first named Bishop of Chiers on 18th January 2013 and was consecrated on May 25th of that same year. The High Court of England and Wales on Friday published its ruling on the legal proceedings initiated by Italian financier Raffaele Mincione in 2020. This was again an attempt by the Secretary of State to halt the investigations launched by the Vatican promoter of justice. Linda Bodoni has this report.
The court found that Mincione and his companies did not meet the standards of good faith in their dealings with the Vatican, particularly regarding the 2018 sale of a London property at number 60 Sloane Avenue. Judge Robin Knowles determined that Mincione had made misleading statements about the property's value and prioritised his own interests over those of the Secretariat of State. The ruling aligns with previous decisions by the Vatican Tribunal, which had already convicted Mincione of financial crimes, sentencing him to 5 years and 6 months in prison and ordering the confiscation of £200.5 million. The court also addressed the role of broker Gianluigi Torzi, finding his actions improper and dishonest in handling Vatican investments. Vatican promoter of justice Alessandro Didi welcomed the decision, stating that it reaffirms the findings of the Vatican courts and confirms that Mincione failed to act with the professional integrity expected in such financial transactions. I'm Linda Bordoni.
You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
Volevo le sassa, volevo le sassa. Hello and welcome to the World Around Us, news about our environment. I am Festus Tarawali. In this edition, we take a look at the persistent legacy of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. An explosion at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in 1986 spread a radioactive cloud over large parts of the then Soviet Union, now the territories of Belarus, Ukraine and the Russian Federation. Nearly 8.4 million people in the three countries were exposed to the radiation. On the 8th of December 2016, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution designating the 26th of April as International Chernobyl Disaster Remembrance Day. As the war in Ukraine continues, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, has again called for maximum military restraint around Ukraine's nuclear sites, following a reported drone attack on Friday, the 14th of February, at the Chernobyl nuclear plant. UN News' Diane Penn has more on that story.
The attack caused a fire at the building containing the remains of the reactor destroyed in the 1986 Chernobyl disaster, the world's worst nuclear accident. No casualties were reported. IAEA Chief Rafael Mariano Grossi said the incident was deeply concerning and underlines the persistent risks to nuclear safety during the military conflict. Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine will enter a fourth year later this month. Ukraine informed the IAEA team at the site that a drone had struck the new safe confinement shield, a large structure built to prevent any radioactive release from the damaged reactor and to protect it from any external hazard. Supplementary information from Ukraine's regulatory body confirmed that the outer cladding had sustained damage. Investigations are underway to determine the status of the inner cladding. The IAEA team was informed that radiation levels inside and outside the reinforced building remain normal and stable. Mr. Grossi noted that the incident comes in the wake of a recent increase in military activity near the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant in southern Ukraine, once again demonstrating that nuclear safety remains under constant threat for as long as the conflict continues.
The three countries affected by the explosions at Chernobyl in 1986 are still living with the consequences today. In this archive interview with Sandra Miller of UN News, former permanent representative of Belarus to the United Nations in Geneva, Yuri Ambrasevich, said around 70% of the radioactive fallout spread across his country, affecting some 2.2 million.
Precisely on the 26th of April, 1986, the world was shaken by a terrible tragedy. You know, the explosion at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in northern Ukraine. Then it was the part of the USSR. And the explosion caused the release of large quantities of radioactive materials into the atmosphere that spread over Western USSR and Europe. And thousands of square kilometers of territories of now Belarus, Ukraine and Russia was contaminated by radiation. These contaminations affected lives of millions of people, and probably if it was not the most important accident from the point of view of number of people that died immediately after it, but in a long-term perspective, during 30 years after the catastrophe, there are dozens of thousands of deaths attributed to Chernobyl, mostly due to the thyroid cancer. Immediately to the accident, the scientists attribute hundreds of deaths immediately after the accident, after the explosion. I have to probably give you some figures about Chernobyl. And first of all, I wish to emphasize that Chernobyl is also part of my own personal story. I was a young boy in Belarus, and I remember very well these days that came suddenly to us, lots of restrictions, and I normally was spending my summertime in a small village near to Mogilev, and I remember very well that this year I was taken to the pioneer camp close to my native city of Vitebsk, and I didn't go to my grandma like I did normally. Every year, I remember we were forbidden to gather berries, to mushrooms, to fish. We were forbidden to do a lot of ordinary things. And we thought at that moment that this is probably something extraordinary happened, and we were not too far from the truth. And finally, it became our routinary life, and still a million of people lives in this condition in Belarus. If you look at figures that I can give you on Chernobyl, I have to say that more than 200,000 of square kilometers, which is five times the territory of Switzerland, was contaminated by radiation after the accident immediately in 1986.
That was Ambassador Yuri Ambrasevich of Belarus speaking there to Sandra Miller in an interview on the effects of the 1986 Chernobyl disaster recorded in April 2018. And that's all for this edition of The World Around Us, News About Our Environment. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.